Hello, today the film world with Kathleen Turner, the longtime star, and Aminata Silla, the absolute beginner. Her first short film shortlisted for a major award. Then there's Tim Eckhart with a scorching family memoir, but he too has brushed with the film business after a stint doing room service in Johannesburg. And Natasha Wood, whose one-woman show is crying out to be immortalised on film. She is the wheelchair-bound performer described by an awestruck reviewer as a motorised Mae West. So I thought Let's turn to Her Majesty's Theatre in the West End, which all week is the ancestral home of Phantom of the Opera. But on Sunday the 30th of March, the stage will be taken over, pushing aside the chorus dancers and crashing chandelier and all that, by the equally full-on Natasha Wood, doing her one-woman play Rolling with Laughter in aid of the Jennifer Trust for Spinal Muscular Atrophy, SMA. You mentioned it just now. I mean, the cause is obviously very close to home because you have it. And sort of more than that, in a way, your brother Johnny died early because of it.
He did. He died 3 years ago at the age of 37. And I'm 37 now, coming up to 38 in a few months. But yes, he did. And it was close to home. And it was quite a shock. I mean, Johnny and I both had type 2 SMA. And there are three types of the disability. Type 1, sadly, we usually infants usually die within the first couple of years. And then type 2 is still very much, you know, it's sort of quite strong. We keep going and there are different variations of type 2. And Johnny had a slightly worse type 2 than I did. So he was never the strongest kid on the block, as I used to sort of say.
So how was life while you were both children? I mean, two of you with this serious disabling disease, two little wheelchairs. I mean, did your whole family kind of revolve around caring for the two poor children in wheelchairs?
Absolutely not. I mean, my mum and dad had a business selling lingerie in the markets in the middle of England. And now my childhood was spent literally selling, you know, knickers, bras, girdles, corsets, push-ups, pull-ups, Ipswich briefs, tummy tuck thongs, you name it. You know, and of course we had, you know, our living room was like a sex shop, and we had a lot of fun with it. And mum and dad's energy, you know, it was interesting that, you know, their energy to life was very, you know, they both came from working class families and they both pushed really hard to sort of have a successful business. And, you know, they just happened to have a couple of disabled kids and my older brother, Martin, as a regular, as I call him. He's the regular one in the family. And then later, many years later, in fact, my parents adopted a baby from Antigua.
So strong-minded parents.
So they're very strong-minded.
Granny.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was a fun childhood. I mean, my earliest memory, my dad's hysterical, very quirky, very funny, lots of energy. And there wasn't much talk of it. There was very little talk of it in the family. And my earliest memory of four is my dad saying, we bought you in a store, toy department, top shelf. And me saying, how much for, Dad? Oh, very cheap on account you were broken. Oh, why didn't you try and fix me? We tried. Your mother went out, bought sticky tape and glue. And it was like that. And it was ongoing, you know. And of course, for 7 years, I thought I'd been bought from Woolworths. And that's the energy of it. And so there was very little talk of it.
So that gave you or helped you develop a very upfront, out there temperament. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of coped through school, didn't you?
And absolutely.
You then got yourself a mainstream job in the BBC as broadcast assistant and so on. Have you never had the slightest doubt that there was anything you couldn't do?
No, I mean, it was great. My energy and sort of, Kathleen was saying earlier about her sort of energy and as a kid, you know, and I was the same thing, 11 years old, selling these bras, you know, to these women. And, you know, my dad taught me to spot a cup size from over 50 paces from the age of six, you know, and that was part of the energy of of my whole childhood. And so there was nothing I always wanted to be an actor. From sort of starring as I was dopey.
Well, market trading is a very good start
absolutely.
For an actor,
a very
isn't
good
it?
Start, very good start. Lots of energy and lots of meeting people of all sorts of walks of life on the market. And I wanted to be an actor. And at seven, I got the part of Dopey in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And my dad sort of took the bathroom door off and carried it down to school, put it on the side of the stage so that we could wheel my wheelchair up. And that was really
as a makeshift ramp.
A makeshift ramp, yeah. I mean, Mum was disgusted, of course. We had no bathroom door for a few weeks. Why you didn't take it off the barn. But yes, I mean, it was the only one, apparently, with no glass that we had. So, and you know, this was the energy of what it was. And I wanted to be an actor. And then after school, you know, throughout school, sort of school, this continued. And I sort of was in school plays, etc. And then and went on to become an actor.
Can you still spot a cup size at 50 yards?
Oh, though? I can. I'm very good at it, yes.
She's looking across the table. Now, Catherine's got her arms folded.
Amidiate's
hunched.
Very good at that. I mean, it's a bit difficult now with all these padded bras, of course. Mm. You know.
Don't you wink at me.
I am told that there is quite a sort of riff in your show about your breast implants, which you decided to have.
Yes, I did. I lost quite a lot of weight through lots of swimming. About 10 years ago, and then, you know, I was missing a little bit of cup size. Mum had a double D cup, and I always felt very annoyed that I didn't get any share of that. And so I decided, literally about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, that I would buy a pair of my own. And I went along and met Dr. Perks, which I hope was an indication of things to come. And Graham Perks, in fact, called me last night, a lovely, lovely man. And that really is his name. Every line in this play is truth. Mm. And every character is real. He's a character in the show.
But you don't get eyebrows raised at you when you're this woman with a serious, muscular, life-threatening, frightfully serious illness in a wheelchair who says, I want breast implants now.
No, I mean, I just said, and he said, you know, I think I went on at first sort of, oh, I want to even out my shape. You know, I've got this like twist in my spine. But of course, the real truth is that I just wanted these great big melons in front of me. You know, in fact, as I went to sleep, I said, you know, do remember, I want to wake up to the Swiss Alps. Oh. You know, and they all just burst out laughter and off I went into sleep.
Was there a big difference personally in the way that you and the way that Johnny approached your illness? Because there you were growing up together, same illness. Was he different about it?
He was great, Johnny. He lived in a home, his choice. He used to call it his little penthouse. And he was really into sort of what was available. If I needed a new wheelchair, I would go to him. You know, he went to all the sort of independent living shows and it was part of sort of he enjoyed sort of knowing about his disability and learning about it and knowing what was available and what cars and adaptations and stuff.
So you could just kind of
Exactly. And he was 2 years older than me. So, of course, he went down the route of he was told we would never drive. And one day he just sort of disappeared. In fact, my parents were very worried and off he went down to the NEC and found a little car. Which was later used in the movie Total Recall, the style of the Johnny cabs, and ironically enough, and he was told, and he came back. You know, Mum and Dad called the police; they thought he'd gone missing, and he came back. You know, and said, "I will drive," and I found a car. So he had all sorts of power and energy himself about what he wanted, but he was not as strong.
I must just ask you, because we've got Kathleen here, what you made of Manhattan and LA, because you spent some time living, working out there.
Oh,
as well.
I loved it. I mean, I actually was in New York. At the beginning of sort of April, and I had a service dog, Labrador, Black Labrador Zoe, who was very much in the play and part of the show. And she and I went to hit New York together, Sex in the City, or Bitch in the City, as I call it. And off we went. And Zoe and I sort of hit. We used to walk 30 blocks to work every day as it got warmer. But we started in the early spring, and we were on the bus, and we ended at toward December, and I was on the bus. And I got friendly with lots of people in New York on the bus. And then, of course, I had a break. And when I went back, they were all like, oh, so you're still here, you know. And there's a huge bus scene in the show. And I said, well, I am, but, you know, the BBC in London, they say I've got to go back, you know. And of course, it became this huge stuff, like, what are you going to do? Well, I don't really want to go back, and I want to be an actor, and I've been working in BBC for now, and blah, blah, blah. And it was kind of this whole huge debate. I mean, like there's a scene a girl from the middle of England would never expect. And there's a huge scene in the play with all these different New York characters who are very real. And they helped me make the decision to quit working behind the scenes in television and to chase my dream of becoming an actor. I drove across America and arrived in LA and went to film school. And started writing this show.
I've never been able to live in Los Angeles. It's not... I don't care for that. I've always lived in New York, and
I miss New York.
Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is get out of the house, and you meet all kinds of wonderful people.
Well,